What in the world is going on in Israel, Bill?
We're living in a breathtaking period of time, Gary, in the United States, and especially in Israel and the Middle East. We are living the most important time in Bible prophecy history. And we're blessed to understand what to watch for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've talked about replacement theology before on your program, but we are a small part of the church that fully understands the biblical significance to the state of Israel and what's taking place in Israel and the Middle East. And the time clock is Jerusalem, and the whole entire world community leadership wants to divide the city of Jerusalem. And we know what Zechariah speaks of to those that attempt to divide Jerusalem, part Jerusalem, or have anything to do with it. There will be it's a burdensome stone, as Zechariah 12:3 speaks of. And, you know, as we talked about, Gary, previously, we are also living in a time when every major final day event is in play. In the past, we'd have two or three at the same time, but today, all 10 or 12, however you want to put it, are in play. And it's happening quickly. It's a breathtaking pace. And I also like to say we are blessed to understand what's taking place because we are living the most important time of biblical history, and only a small percentage of people that do attend church are aware of this.
Now, maybe you watch events in Israel. Maybe you're one of those like me who realize that Israel is Bible prophecy. Today's Israel basically is poised in a unique place. But maybe also you've noticed that you really can't tell the players without a scorecard. And that's why I'm really anxious to talk to Bill and to clear up the confusion about all the different factions in Israel. Turkey, Russia, Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Egypt, strange things going on in Egypt. Of course, we have Hamas in Gaza. What I'm trying to say is, Bill, it's confusing. And today I'd like for you to clarify the geopolitics of the Middle East and the American relationship with all that.
Well, when the Arab Spring started 3 years ago, everybody was real excited that this was going to be a new beginning. For the Middle East, President Obama, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice, they were all incredibly excited that this is going to be a new time and a new era of democracy. This was a Bush-Rice vision during George W. Bush's time in office. Mm-hmm. There was great excitement. But us that understand the Bible, understand Bible prophecy, and understand the people of the region and the people that follow the Quran, we knew this was going to be a very difficult time. It would also be very difficult for the Christians throughout the Middle East that are experiencing an incredible level of persecution, more persecution than they ever, ever have experienced. But the Arab Spring has been first phase was a radical Islamic takeover of countries, one country after another. But now the countries Tunis and Egypt and even Syria are rejecting it. And so consequently, we're moving into a period of disruption. We're moving into a period of civil conflict in country after country throughout the Middle East. And these brilliant think tankers are think tankers that think they have an understanding of the people of the Middle East are once again being proven that as smart as they are, they don't understand the Middle East, they don't understand the people, and they don't understand the people that follow the Quran.
Hmm. And, of course, that holds true because basically we're not talking about politics as much as we are spirituality. That is the fulfillment of God's prophesied plan. And as a Christian, I can read the Bible and I can see all of these elements coming into play. There aren't too many people in secular think tanks who have that perspective.
They don't. And that really is a blessing and a benefit to us that have a biblical worldview on how the world operates. Mm-hmm. And especially the Israel and the Middle East region, we fully understand the key countries such as Egypt and Syria and Turkey, Iran, Iraq, Saudi Arabia, Russia, who has a great influence in this region. So we have the benefit of knowing who to watch, what leaders to watch, and also because of the internet, we can read every single major newspaper throughout the Middle East. We can read European newspapers. We can read what the Russian press is talking about Israel in the Middle East. So we do have that benefit and understanding of the people of the region, and also what to watch as watchmen in the days ahead.
Yeah. Now, as a member of the White House Press Corps in Washington, you're probably unique there, I would imagine, in your perspective as a Bible-believing Christian.
Very much so.
How does that work?
Well, it's been fascinating. There's 250 hard-pass credentialed White House correspondents. I've been there over 13 years, going on my 14th. And there's, the best I can tell, there's 7 or 8 believers in the press corps. And the other, most of the believers of the 7 or 8, I'm the only one that understands the biblical significance of the state of Israel. The others are from very nice men and women, but they're from replacement theology churches.
Exactly. And by the way, sadly, those dominate the Christian perspective today, population-wise.
Very much.
There are consequences for the way you relate to Israel. Go into that just a little bit.
When you watch U.S. presidents and their secretaries of state apply pressure on Israel, whether it's through public statements, whether it's through peace conferences, whether it's behind-the-scenes pressure, we have seen over and over again catastrophic events take place, many of them within 24 hours. And since the Madrid Land for Peace Conference has started in October of 1991, when the perfect storm was sending 30-foot waves into President Bush's Kennebunkport home, as he is sitting at a podium in Madrid, Spain, calling on Israel to give up Judea and Samaria and Jerusalem.
Wow.
The wave, the perfect storm that evolved out of nowhere, was sending massive waves into his home at the very same time. And since the Madrid conference and over the last 20 years of the peace conference, we've had 90 record-setting events. These are all-time record-setting events. These are mostly billion-dollar catastrophes that happened at the very time the United States was applying pressure on Israel. And what I noticed over and over again, the greater the pressure on Israel to divide their land, the greater the corresponding catastrophe. Two great examples would be 9/11. 17 days prior to 9/11, President Bush was working with the Crown Prince Abdullah of Saudi Arabia on a comprehensive address, and he was going to call for a Palestinian state. They finished their work on 9/10, and 9/11 happened the next day. And the next event was Katrina, that was right on the heels of after 9,500 Jews were evicted from their home in Israel. The God of Israel had put in their heart to move back to Israel and to occupy that land, and Katrina happened immediately thereafter.
In other words, you're making a connection between the way one treats Israel and the way one is blessed by God.
It's Genesis 12:3. God intended for those that blessed Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and their descendants to be blessed, and those who did not would be cursed. The Middle East leaders, just to digress a bit, every Middle East leader that attempted to divide or conquer the land of Israel had a catastrophic physical ending to their life.
Wow.
It's remarkable.
Nasser
and Sadat and Hariri from Lebanon and Saddam Hussein from Egypt and Yasser Arafat and Hafez Assad. So,
well, as you say that, I feel a little chill because right now we're not treating Israel very well. That is, our current administration is, I think, putting great pressure on Benjamin Netanyahu to get him to give up the so-called West Bank area, Judea and Samaria, and to putting pressure on him, I should say, to the point that it's noticeable. There's a kind of a hostility brewing there, which makes me just a little uncomfortable.
Absolutely. It's substantial, Gary. Matter of fact, we have just under 60 events with 9/11, Katrina, Rita, Wilma, Hurricane Andrew, on and on. And it's one event after another. I mean, these catastrophic weather-related events we've had in America this year, every time the United States, whether it's John Kerry or Obama, are involved in pressuring Israel, we have another massive winter storm. We've had one after another. A couple weeks ago, John Kerry, this was in December, John Kerry is in Israel, landing in Israel, and Jerusalem had the largest snowstorm in its history with over 20 inches of snow. It completely stuck John Kerry. He could not move around. He finally got to Ramallah. He had his meeting with Abbas. It took him 2 hours through driving snow to get to Jerusalem, which usually takes 20 minutes. It was catastrophic event after another while he was in Jerusalem. And it's been one event after another. It continues.
I think he went on to remark on global warming after that and the catastrophic effects of weather being blamed on global warming.
Yes, he went to Indonesia to have a major address on global warming. And at the time he was there in Indonesia, a volcano exploded and burst into the air and canceled his meeting, his global warming meeting with the president of Indonesia, because of this massive volcano and disrupted air flights on and on and on. So this happens over and over again. Some people say it's so hard to believe, but you know, when you're talking about the 90 largest events in U.S. history, at the time, U.S. pressure on Israel, and the greater the pressure, the greater the corresponding event, there's something here, and it gets back to Genesis 12:3. God did not plan for Judea and Samaria to be an Arab state.
Wow.
And when the international community, whether it's the leaders of the United States or the international community, start talking about taking the biblical heart of Israel and making it an Arab state with East Jerusalem as the capital, you can see that, you can feel the collective fury and fire from the God of Israel. There's atmospheric and political consequences.
Well, Bill, I want to pursue a couple of detailed events in the Middle East that I happen to know a little something about. Not as much as you, I'm sure, because you just got back from Israel. You've talked to important people there. You've interviewed them. And I want to ask you about the quote-unquote civil war in Syria right now, and also the Turkish leader's relationship with Vladimir Putin and with the leadership in Iran. What is happening in that cluster of superpowers?
Syria is a very significant and important crisis. I remember a couple of years ago when this conflict began, a friend of mine who's a Maronite Catholic with Al Arabiya. It's a Arab Saudi Arabia funded news organization, told me, he said, I asked him, I said, how long will Assad be able to stay in place?
Mm-hmm.
He said, a long time. I said, well, we just saw Gaddafi take a fall. We've seen other leaders in the Middle East take a fall. He said, no, no. He said, it's a very, a whole different situation in Syria. The Alawite, which is a very small minority, is kind of quasi-Shiite, and supported by Iran, and the military supported by Iran, are in commerce, they're in police, they're in security, they're in the military. And they have a tight grip on the way that country operates. And I said, wow, well we'll watch. Well, sure enough, he was absolutely correct. Here we are, over 140,000 people have been killed in both sides of the conflict. It is a very significant conflict right now. The rebels, supported by the Sunni countries, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, are trying to overthrow the Iranian-backed Assad government. But they don't have the weaponry and the capability that Assad has. On the Assad side, you have Russia, China, and Iran. On the rebel side, so to speak, you have the Sunni countries, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Kuwait, and then you have the United States, NATO, and Europe. The United States, because of the humanitarian crisis in Europe, wants to see Assad step down and turn over the leadership of that country to democratic elected officer. What's interesting in Syria, about 75-80% of Syria is Sunni. But it's the small percentage that controls the country. And this has turned into a very significant conflict, number one, because of the humanitarian crisis, but number two is the fact that you have the who's who of Islamic thugs from around the Middle East that are operating out of Syria. This is a very significant battle for the future of Syria. The rebels have a large portion of the eastern part of the country. The Kurds are gaining control of the northeastern part of the country. Assad's strong in the central part of the northern and the east, western part of the country. and has very significant control of Damascus and other significant population centers. So this is a very, this conceptually, if there was a way to work this out right now, you'd divide the country into three areas. Assad's not in favor of that. The rebels are not capable, unfortunately, because you have some radical Islamic groups that have worked their way into the rebel groups, such as Al-Qaeda and other terror groups from around the Middle East. And another thing that really concerns the United States and Europe is there are European and United States Muslims also come into this conflict and have become battle-tested, that after this war, at some time in this war, they will go back to Europe. They will go back to the United States and pose a very significant potential threat, terror threat to Europe and as also the United States. It's a very complicated matters. There's no peace coming. It's too complicated, and this war will continue to last. I go to a lot of think tank meetings on this, Gary, and it's going to last for a while.
Well, I'm sure you're familiar with Isaiah 17, you know, and the burden of Damascus, where Damascus will be removed as a city, no longer in existence. And Christians are looking at that and saying, could something catastrophic erupt in Damascus or Syria in general? Now, having said that, let's go back to Benjamin Netanyahu. His position is rather firm, and you've been in Israel. You understand the dynamics of that situation. What's happening there right now?
Well, mentioning Isaiah 17, it's very interesting because I was there in September when all this United States conversation, Obama said they've crossed Syria's crossed the red line. People are losing their lives because of chemical weapons. Obama's hand was forced because he was the one that says if they, the Syrian government, ever uses chemical weapons, the United States will be forced to do something. A great concern at that time we were in Israel was the fact that Damascus, this prophecy about Damascus could possibly be fulfilled right at that time.
Right.
Israel was at a high state of alert, was very concerned about the chemical weapons that Syria has. Israel continues to take out chemical weapon transfers to Hezbollah. There's been three or four examples, and this is one thing that irritates us that are pro-Israel, is the fact that the Pentagon has leaked this a couple times, that it was Israel, in fact, that took out these shipments in different parts of Syria and also Lebanon. But the key here for Netanyahu, he was greatly concerned about the security application of this. The United States moved five ships into the Mediterranean. They were really serious about hitting Syria. And then in that case, Assad says, if we are hit, we are going to rain missiles down on Tel Aviv. So he was saying, if you hit us, United States, we're going to rain missiles and also probably rockets in from Hezbollah on the northern border of Israel into Israel. So Putin got involved. They started negotiating. He outflanked and flanked both Obama and Kerry, was able to move himself into a position of influence and leadership. And we backed down, and we've been in these conferences in Geneva, which will never work out a solution. There's never typical Middle Eastern conferences. They have conferences, conferences, and conferences, but never any solution. So, obviously, it's a little bit calmer in Israel right now. The possibility of having missiles and rockets rain down in their cities has diminished since the United States backed its ships out of the Mediterranean. But obviously, Israel continues to be at a reasonable high state of alert in the event of a possibility of eventual missiles. But Israel has some very sophisticated systems that will be able to handle a lot of this. From that perspective, it's a challenging time to be the Prime Minister of Israel, but they're well aware of what's taking place. They have great security. They have great intelligence inside of Syria, Israel does.
What's your general feeling about a war in the region? Now,
you know, Gary, it's almost a period of calm before a storm. It is so calm. We've spent numerous trips to Israel in the last 16 months. It's very interesting because people in Israel have a great level of confidence in their military and the leadership of Benjamin Netanyahu to be able to handle these threats. Also, there's a relative calmness because there's a lot of internal problems in Egypt and Turkey and Syria and Lebanon and Iraq. These are civil conflicts in every one of those countries. So their internal problems in those countries I just mentioned are much more significant and much more of interest to them now than doing anything with Israel.
Well, you know, Israel is highly, highly technological. Many say they have the most advanced weaponry in the world, perhaps.
I believe that.
And they have the Arrow 3 rocket, the anti-missile missile. They have a number of
Iron Dome, David Sling, other things that they're perfecting. They're developing laser technology now to take missiles out. It's, absolutely agree with you, Gary. We know a lot of what they have, but there's a lot that I'm convinced that they have that we don't know. That the God of Israel has given them the kind of defense equipment that will be able to sustain them in any kind of conflict.
Prophecy says they will be victorious.
Absolutely.
In a series of wars. Bill, we have a few minutes left, and what are you working on now? What do you see yourself doing in the next few weeks or months?
Well, Gary, a lot of the focus for me is the White House role in Israel and the Middle East. And that's one of my messages that I continue to update because so much is happening. I being at the White House, watching the incredible responsibility that the United States still has in the Middle East, President Obama, some of the people that he's selected that I'm concerned about are not strong enough. Former Vice President Cheney said a couple weeks ago, our allies in the Middle East don't trust us and our enemies don't fear us. And so we are watching very closely the events that are taking place in Israel. Everything is in play in the Middle East. And what I mean by that is every country in the Middle East has some type of conflict or some type of disruption. I've never seen anything quite like this. So for us that follow Israel in the Middle East, it is very challenging to stay up with all the significant things that are taking place every single week in the Middle East, and especially for us that have a great love and interest in Bible prophecy. This is literally the most exciting time in Bible prophecy history to watch what's taking place with all these key final day countries.
Now, you and I both believe in the pre-tribulation rapture of the church. We believe that there are wars in the future. The Bible prophesies all this. You're right in the middle of things. You're in the thick of the idea world, where people are exchanging ideas. I think it's a wonderful spot for you to be in. It seems as though the Lord has put one of His own right in the middle of the enemy camp.
Well, I appreciate that, Gary. And when I speak, and I remind people often, we are living in a very challenging time in the United States, somewhat ominous at times. And we're living in a very serious time in Israel and the Middle East. And I remind people when they are low in hope that the God of Israel is in control of all of this.
Amen.
He is the one that is allowing these final day events to come to fruition because His Son, Yeshua, is coming back to reign from Jerusalem. And these things must happen for that to happen. And I also remind people that God has His people everywhere, in the White House, in the Pentagon, in the CIA, on Capitol Hill, you name it, Gary, we've talked about this before, God has His people everywhere. So don't fret and don't worry, and there's a lot of watchmen that God has put in very key places right now, so keep the hope up.